what I do with it. This project was produced by Belong Aotearoa with the support from the J.R. Mackenzie Trust and Planet FM. The series is an exploration of the employment journey for people of migrant and former refugee background in Aotearoa. It features conversations with people of lived experience and experts who share with us their stories and their own perspectives.
Welcome to Pass the Mic. I'm your host, Shabnam Nisha, and with me in studio is our producer, Gina Gonzalez. I'd like to welcome our guest, Hen Zaki, founder of Women of Color in Public Sector Network and Hen Zaki Consulting. Salam, Hen. Welcome to our podcast.
Kia ora, assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much for having me, Shabna and Sheena. It's lovely to be here with you today.
Thank you very much for coming in. We'll get straight into it. When you were a little kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, similar to so many kids, at one point I wanted to be a teacher. And my dad is a medical doctor, so I wanted to be a pediatric doctor for a while. So it was always connected to doing something that would help others or make a difference.
That's lovely, eh? Trying to make a difference in other people's lives. That's nice that you had that as a kid. I'd like to know where you're originally from and what brought you here to Aotearoa.
I'm originally from Cairo, Egypt, and I came to New Zealand as an international student to pursue a PhD at the University of Auckland. And while I was in Egypt, I applied for different institutions, and I got accepted here. And then we decided to relocate to New Zealand with my husband and two daughters. And I pursued a PhD in politics and international relations.
Well, what a journey. Why do you think we need to look at the employment experience of women of colour with migrant and refugee backgrounds in New Zealand?
It's very challenging, especially for people from migrant and refugee background, and specifically women, so women of colour, to find jobs here that are equivalent to their skills and experiences. So just to give you a bit of background, I spent my childhood in the UK, and that's where I learned English. I did my undergraduate in the US, and I've worked in international organization and regional organizations while I was in Egypt. And I thought that coming to New Zealand, it was going to be easy to find a job because I know the language. I've lived in Western societies. I have experience. While I was an undergraduate, I worked in the US as a student. I also went to the UK for a semester abroad and worked there. So I thought it was just going to be very easy to find a job. But as you know, it was not easy. Initially, I wanted a part-time role so I can do while studying. And I was applying for basic jobs sometimes. I would not even get a call back or a response. And at some point, I approached some Kiwis that I knew and I was like, what do I need to do? I mean, I'm not getting any callbacks and I have all this experience. And they looked at my CV and they Kiwi-ized it. So they were like, let's make it appealing to Kiwis. And but still, it was still very, very challenging. And people would say network, but how do you network when you're in a new country and you don't know anyone? So that's where do you network? And sometimes you'd approach people and they don't really want to talk to you. They don't know you. So it was very challenging. So finding that first job was challenging, but it wasn't just that. It was also moving up. There's something that I would want to mention, and if there's one thing that I want people to know, is that there are in-group and out-group dynamics that play out in the workplace.
What do you mean by in-group and out-group dynamics?
So when someone has similar identities to you, so they have the same ethnic background or same gender, they're part of your in-group. So what that means is trust is given to that person. When that person makes mistakes, they're not seen as severe. You're more patient. You're more empathetic. So that person is part of your in-group. And that's unconsciously. It's not something that people do consciously. But when someone's part of your out-group, they're not from the same ethnic background, economic background, or gender, then they have to work extra hard to prove themselves. When they face challenges or even when they lose loved ones, you're not as empathetic towards that person.
Yeah.
So trust is not given, it's earned. They have to work extra hard to prove themselves and continue to prove themselves. So what that means is if you have two people in the workplace, one is your part of your out-group and one part of your in-group and you're a people leader, the person who's part of your in-group will move up more. The work that they do would be perceived in more positive light.
That's right.
And that's all unconsciously. It's not conscious. So every people leader, every manager needs to know that this exists and that they need, when making decisions, to slow down. Because when we make fast, hasty decisions, that's when those things impact the people around us, and we make hasty decision, and it brings that unconscious into the workplace. So it's really important. And I've seen it a lot of times. I've heard it. And what really hurts is when it happens, when someone loses a loved one and that person is perceived as being part of the outgroup, people are not as empathetic towards it. And it really hurts because that's the most time that people want someone to be compassionate towards them when they're facing those challenges. Mm,
that's right. Unconscious bias. Yeah, I feel like I felt that in a few workplaces myself, now that you mention it. What do you think are the main causes of this in just bullet points?
I mean, stereotypes, the media, things that you're just growing up, you see every day and you're just used to it. And when you're always are surrounded by people who look like you, this think the same way as you, then you don't challenge your thoughts.
Yeah.
And that's when it comes into play. So it's really important that we're all biased.
Yeah.
We all have biases, and it's important when we have certain feelings to stop and question ourselves. Why do we feel this way? Is it because the person did something, or is it based on something, some stereotype I have? And I can give you an example, very simple. The best stereotype about Muslim women, what's the best stereotype out there, is that they need saving. So yeah. If you have a Muslim woman working for you, and that's the perception that you have based on the media, would you be moving this person up into senior positions? That's just one example.
Wow.
So you have women from migrant and refugee background who come here with lots of skills, lots of experience. Because to get into even a basic role, you have to have lots of skills and experience. And they go into work and the place is not inclusive. People are not aware of their unconscious bias. And then what you get is actually a loss for the organization, because these people can't, these women are not working to their full potential. They're basically, because the fact that the workplace is not inclusive, is they're surviving and they're not thriving. They're questioning themselves. Mm. They're questioning the skills. So at the end, they're not able to perform at their best. Mm. So it's really important that people, leaders, managers are aware of that, because you need to create that environment. You need to be aware of your conscious, unconscious biases so you can help these women, because it's the right thing to do, but it's also the profitable thing to do.
Yeah. Because they come with a lot of skills that sometimes just go unnoticed.
And it's heartbreaking. You meet women who were managers, who have all these years of experience. And then what role are they in New Zealand? A very entry-level job.
Yeah.
That does not take into consideration all those years of experience and the value that they bring to the workplace. They're not seen. The value that they bring is not seen. So,
what are some of the barriers that these women find that works against them in the workplaces?
So there is the example of being in entry-level jobs and not being able to move up. But there's also in how we talk about things sometimes. For a lot of women of color or people from ethnic backgrounds, we focus on the community. And that was something that was brought up in actually a webinar that was organized by the Women of Color in the Public Sector Network. And one of the speakers there talked about how when we speak, we talk we. We always say we, but here in the workplace, you have to talk about I, even if you worked with people. And that's extremely hard.
Yeah.
I was leading a project and I was presenting and I couldn't get myself to say I had to say we, because it's not just me. There's all these people who've contributed to this project. And that's how it is. It's like we talk about the community. It's not about just the individual.
Yeah.
And so having to get people or women or men from migrant and refugee backgrounds to talk about I, it's very uncomfortable. But you need to learn to do that to be able to move up and focus and just to highlight all the achievements you've done.
It's really awesome that you've highlighted that. That is something that I felt like I had to do in the workplace as well. It was really hard in the beginning, but yes, it is something we learn in the course of our journey in employment in New Zealand, isn't it? Well, thank you for bringing that up.
And another example is that usually it's like, focus, get the work done, just focus on your work. But actually, you need to network, you need to connect, you need to approach people and reach out. No one's going to be like, oh, they're doing an amazing work, now let's promote them. No, you have to actually promote yourself sometimes.
Yeah,
and that's sometimes hard to do and challenging, because you need to learn how to do it.
Absolutely. Sometimes as migrants or refugees, when we secure employment, we think that's it. That will be the end line to our struggles. Do you think once we are in a work environment, we move on to have the life of a regular Kiwi?
Well, I think it doesn't just end by having an employment. That's kind of the start of the professional journey.
Yes.
And more often than not, you'll be in a workplace where you're the only person that looks like you.
Yes.
And for you to thrive, you need to find a place of belonging. So I would highly recommend reaching out to employee-led networks, so understanding what networks exist within your workplace, because that's where you're going to find the strength. When you're surrounded by people who look like you, who understand your experiences, then you can thrive. You need that place of belonging. So, and a lot of the workplaces that I've been part of, so I've created the Women of Color Network at one of my workplaces, and then there's the Woman of Color in the public sector, and that's why I've established them or worked with women to establish them, is to have a place for us to belong and connect and support one another. Because without them, it'll be really challenging just to exist in the workplace, to just thrive.
Yeah.
And usually those networks have, they organize webinars, they have in-person or online get-togethers. And for me, it always fills my cup when I attend the Women of Color in the Public Sector Network events or meetings. And that's what I found also when I talk to people who've been part of the network, and they say that it's actually a place for connection and belonging. I attend your events and I can connect. It resonates. It's totally like they can resonate with different parts of it. But also to look for ways to upskill yourself. Are there opportunities for a workshop to attend or a program? And that's where my program, I've established a program for women from diverse ethnic backgrounds to help them. So it's for women who are about to enter the workforce or women who have been in the workforce for a few years, to give them things like a leadership and networking skills, communication skills, and to actually understand the challenges that come with having intersectional identities and how to navigate that. Mm. And it's an opportunity to learn and upskill, but it's also an opportunity to connect with sisters who look like you.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Now, we've heard you say a few times that women of color don't get promoted. Do you think there's a glass ceiling?
According to research, and we just had a recent event called the Concrete Ceiling webinar, and we have a Concrete Ceiling campaign coming up. And according to research, Pakeha women face glass ceiling. But what exists for women of color is a concrete ceiling. Oh. It's harder to get through. Mm. But you can get through with support and upskilling yourself and working together, but also changing the system and raising awareness. And that's what we're going to be doing with the Women of Color in the Public Sector Network, is starting a campaign this year to raise awareness about the concrete ceiling. So about what is the situation right now, focusing on what could be done, what can women of color and allies do to break that ceiling together, to work together, and then how can we pave the way for the next generation? Because it's not just about this generation, it's about the next generation.
Right.
Whatever change we bring, whatever awareness we raise, is because we want our children. I'm going to talk a bit about the children, is because most of the people from refugee and migrant background, me included, I have kids, I've came to New Zealand for a better opportunities for them.
Yes.
And it was disheartening to then discover that actually they can't live up to their full potential, because sometimes they'll be judged based on the color of their skin or their name or what they choose or not to wear on their head.
Yeah.
So I want opportunities for them, just the same as everyone else. And that's where my passion comes, to making a difference for the next generation.
Oh, Hendy, you're in a wonderful spot right there. I mean, there's going to be a lot of women looking out for you after this. Going back to some of the skills to develop, do you think employers have a responsibility there?
Absolutely. I think there's two things here. Women of color can work on themselves, can become part of networks, but you need people leaders to also create that inclusive environment. So we need two things that need to happen. And I actually have a program for that as well. So it's the Rahma Leadership Program, which means Rahma is an Arabic word for compassion. And usually what I hear is that organizations have strategies. But what does that mean day to day for people leaders? Sometimes that's the missing part.
Yeah.
And that's what the program does, is to give them those understanding of how to create that inclusive environment for everyone day to day. So things like, what is compassionate leadership? What is in-group and out-group dynamics, like we mentioned? What is conscious and unconscious bias? How can you create a learning culture? Because one of the things sometimes in workplaces, within a team, there's lots of knowledge, lots of experiences, but people are not building on each other's strength. So how can you create that learning culture? Psychological safety. It's very important. If you want people to raise concerns, then they need to feel safe to be able to do that. How do we look at mistakes as opportunities? Instead of kind of, oh, you made this mistake, how could you, what were you thinking kind of thing. So how do you create that? And that's what the program will help people leaders with. It's a 12-week program. It's based on, yes, transferring knowledge and skills, not just me, but also from three other women who are experts in their fields. And it's also connecting the participants together, because when you have people working together, learning from one another, that's where the power is.
Gosh, sounds fabulous. Have you personally had experience with any employers where you felt like you were marginalized or not used to your full potential in a workplace?
So I'm a visible Muslim woman, so it's not just employers. I know when I meet people, there's always a stereotype about who I am or what I am capable of. So for example, when I was doing my PhD, I had a woman just directly tell me that when I think of Muslim women, I don't think of them doing a PhD.
Oh, wow.
So you always have that perception, stereotypes, lack of knowledge. I'm usually patient with people and I take time to hopefully get them to understand who I am and what I'm capable of. I was also in the US when 9/11 happened, so I'm familiar with being in situations where there's a lot of stereotypes around.
You were there during the 9/11?
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
So my university was in New York.
Yep.
And I arrived from Cairo about 2 weeks before 9/11. I was an undergraduate. I was 16 years old. And it took me about a year to convince my parents to let me travel halfway across the world to pursue my education in the US.
Amazing.
But we got there in the end. But then 9/11 happened. So it was very challenging time. So they were like, oh, you left and you went and you did what you wanted and now this happened, you need to come back. And I was wearing a headscarf and I still am.
Yes.
But I had just started wearing it about a year ago, a year before I arrived. So my mom asked me that, okay, if you choose to stay, then take off your headscarf. And to be honest, when I started wearing it, it wasn't because I was religious, so that's why I decided to wear it. It was more a cultural thing. It's like, it's expected. Come a certain age, you start wearing it.
Yeah.
But at 16, when 9/11 happened, I was the only person in the university wearing a headscarf.
Wow.
I don't know where I got the courage from, but I questioned, like, why am I wearing it? What's the purpose? And in the end, I was like, I'm not wearing it for people. I'm wearing it for God, for Allah.
Yes.
It's based on it's part of my identity, it's part of who I am, so I'm going to continue wearing it. And I convinced my parents that to let me stay.
Yes.
I don't even remember what the conversations were, how, because if it was my kid, I would probably have gone on the plane and went and got her from the country, but my parents trusted me enough to let me stay.
Yes.
So I did. And all I wanted to be was a teenager. I was 16. I just wanted to enjoy the university. But now I was put on the spot of being the representative of Islam and everyone would come to me. And I've decided that I was put in this place. God put me in this situation for a reason.
Yes.
And I will speak up and I'll tell them what I know about the religion.
Yes.
And it was one professor that came to me a few months after that decision I made to stay and continue there. And she was like, Hend, you're changing people's mind about Islam by just being you, by just walking around. And that really was very heartwarming. And it made me feel like, oh, I was doing something. I was making a difference.
That's beautiful. That's so beautiful. And it's amazing. You know, you've put yourself out there and you got yourself noticed. I think that's what women of color in New Zealand need to do, right? We need to put ourselves out there and be noticed. That's amazing. Are these issues exclusive to New Zealand? You've been all over the world. It sounds like you've done half of the world already. So the issues that you've talked about before, do you think these are exclusive to New Zealand?
No, I don't think they're exclusive to New Zealand, and it's based on research. When I face some challenges, I started researching and I found that women of color in the US, in the UK, in different parts of the world experience it. It's not just in New Zealand. But sometimes it, when you're in a multicultural environment, people will be accepting more. So for example, I lived in New York, so it was very multicultural. I didn't experience as much. But I was also in a university environment, so it's hard to really compare. But based on research, it exists everywhere, and you need those support. You need women to just believe in themselves and really be proud of who they are and their identity, and to understand that wherever they go, they're adding value. And if it's someone doesn't see your value, that's their problem. It's not your problem. You just be proud of who you are.
So what kind of actions can we take to get rid of this perception, these issues?
Understand that it's not you. Yes, there are issues there. There are systematic racism. There is the conscious and unconscious bias. And just don't take it in. But also to surround yourself with a support system. So that could be being part of an employee-led network, being part of another professional network. Because you need, no one does it alone. You can't be alone. We need support. We need our sisters.
We need the village.
We need the village. Absolutely.
So is there anyone out there already taking some action?
Yep. So we have the Women of Color in the Public Sector, which you can be part of if you work in the public sector. It's open to everyone. So it's open to women. It's open to allies of all genders, ethnicities, backgrounds. I have the Rahma Sisters, which is for Muslim women.
Yes.
And it's a safe space for Muslim women to connect, support one another and thrive. I also have my programs to support women. So like the Rahma Connect, Belong and Thrive program, which would help them, give them those skills to thrive in the workplace.
Awesome. So what should employers do to deal with this perception, these issues?
So having an inclusion diversity strategy is great, but what do people, leaders, need to do on a day-to-day basis? The cultural competency is very important.
Yes.
Ongoing training, ongoing opportunities for people leaders to come together and just discuss the challenges and opportunities and how to manage people from diverse backgrounds. Because what I found is, yes, the workplace is becoming more diverse, but leaders, the people leaders, don't have the skills to manage people in a way where they can thrive and not just survive. There's lots of programs out there, and one of them is my program, which is the Rahma Leadership Program. The Rahma means compassion, so it's a compassion leadership program, and it teaches some of those skills to how to manage and lead a diverse team.
Okay, so is this where you go out to certain companies and businesses and actually have a corridor with everyone in the team?
So leaders can just join. They can also provide it to in-house within a specific organization.
Okay. Oh, awesome.
And it's a 12-week program with different workshops on different topics like psychological safety, in-group and out-group dynamics, compassionate leadership. And it's not just me. So I'm, yes, the lead facilitator, but I'm working with other amazing women on this program.
Oh, sounds great. I think you've got a little bit of support for the women of color out there already. And that's really good to hear. So moving on from here, what would you like to see different?
Like see culturally competent leaders?
Yeah, culturally competent leaders, yes.
They're aware of their biases, and it's okay. We all have biases, and that's absolutely fine. It's also, I would like people to see the value that people from refugee and migrant background bring. They bring lots of knowledge, they bring lots of experience, and uniqueness as well. If we have a workplace where everyone looks the same, then it won't be as innovative or as productive if you have people with diverse thoughts.
Yeah.
So how can we build on that? And how can we create that psychological safety for people to bring their thoughts and share them in a way?
Are there any other projects that you're currently involved with, or have you got any sessions coming up next that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I have the program that I talked about, which is the Rahma Leadership Program. I have the Rahma Connect, Belong and Thrive program for women from diverse backgrounds. I also have the Inclusion and Compassion in Action. That is a workshop. It's just a one-day workshop. And the idea is inclusion means different things for different people. And just because maybe two people on the team are from the same background or the same religion, that inclusion might mean different things for them.
Yeah.
And what that workshop does is to, it's a team building kind of exercise, which would you get to know one another better and understand what inclusion means for every team member and then work together to create that inclusive and compassionate and safe environment.
Oh, sounds awesome.
And it consists of a survey first to understand the team members better, then a workshop, and then a report so they can work together.
Does the report go anywhere else, or do you just go back to employers?
To the team. So the team that would participate in the workshop would be the one that would get the report. It would be to the people leader, and then they can decide how to distribute it among the team members.
Oh, okay, that sounds good. So where can people hear from you, or if someone wants to connect with you, where can they find you?
So LinkedIn is the best way. You can just search Hen Zaki and you can find me. I also have a website, which is www.hzconsulting.co.nz.
That kind of brings us towards the end of our podcast. Is there any last words that you want to say before we wrap it up today?
Just be strong and brave and believe in yourself and don't do it alone. Just reach out to your sisters, to your village, and there's always support out there.
Well, that brings us to the end of our Pass the Mic podcast episode. Thank you very much for joining us, Hen. It has been a lovely time sharing this space with you today. We wish you a wonderful day ahead. Thank you to all listening in. And with that, we are out. Nga mihi ka kite anō. That was our Pass the Mic episode. Check out the rest of our season dedicated to the employment experience of migrants and former refugees. Share your favorite episodes and subscribe to our channel. If you haven't already, go back to our first Pass the Mic series, which highlights a range of ethnic experiences in Aotearoa. Our employment season is a collaboration between Belong Aotearoa, Foundation North and Planet FM with assistance from Voice of Aroha. You can find the link to these organizations in the bio.
Stream it, listen on demand, pod it. Your favourite shows are waiting on planetaudio.org.nz.
here.
The automatic pistol remote control. From this a little song come for rock your soul. The automatic this a zero one gate clapper. The gang madam muche tango sat up in a lap. And that a de chop, and that a de chopper. Because the other girl with pistol back a wire gate clapper. For other girl with pistol back a wire gate clapper. The gang madam muche tango sat up in a lap. And that a de chop, and that a de chopper. Can we say only some bamba sat up on the arm. Only some bamba sat up on the arm. Chow won't him and gonna the dread start conquer. Chow won't him and gonna the dread start conquer. Every ship I carry anchor. Chow make a chill on this and wanna happy conquer. Oh, we bless it because the attack of a clap well at. Come on, we say the attack of a clap well at. Come on, can we say we not take a stack and say the king is over top and to the very large up and say no bother come the cup. Because me sweet like any water in a coconut. Say that me sweet like any water in a coconut. Me say the automatic pistol remote controller. For the automatic pistol remote controller. For wicked gana Zion figure chatter to the lion. Say wicked gana Zion figure chatter to the lion. Jaja chise mota Zion with him ayam. Tilo jaja chise mota Babylon yard. Katilio nati don't play card in a Babylon yard. Him don't play card in a Babylon yard. For the automatic pistol remote controller. For the automatic pistol remote controller. Brandstall Lico song come to rock your soul. For the automatic it's a 0-1 gate clap. The gang mother mushe tango sat up in a chopper. That a de chopper, can that a de chopper. Say that we done the dog on Madison Square. Come on me say the girls and the boys were there. Come on me say the big bamboo in the light of the moon. The big bamboo in the light of the moon. Can not you rub it on the Madison Square. Can't you not you rub it on a broken chair. Come on can not you rub it in a Madison Square. Do it the attack of a clock will hurt. Come on and me down the outer car busy go by your felt hat. Me down the outer car busy go by your felt hat. Say here come a bad boy a fire potion. It's a pity if no no say feel me poopa. It's a copy man going up in a love cut. Show me can't you know say the love cut a dead job. Show me can't you know say me down the outer stadium fi have some fun. Me down the outer stadium fi have some fun. Say here come a bad boy to back in big gun. Say here come a bad boy to back in big gun. He must see warm if you run up and down. Come on he must see warm if you run up and down. Do it.
Our diversity on air, online, on demand with funding support through New Zealand On Air.
Now you talk about your gamblers. You ought to see old Richard Lee. Bet $1,000, boys, and you come out on a three. You lose your money, learn to lose. Now the stack of Lee and Billy is gambling late at night. Staggly and Billy Lyons, they had an awful fight. Lose your money, learn to lose. Staggly said to Billy, I can't let you go with that. You done won my money, you can't have my Stetson hat. Lose your money, learn to lose. Staggly went running up that northern track. He said, I ain't gonna kill you now, but don't be here when I get back. Lose your money, learn to lose. Now Stack Lee come running in the red hot broiling sun. He said, reach down in the drawer, Roberta, give me my 41. Lose your money, learn to lose. Heard a Stag Lee come a running.
stood in the barroom door. There was old Billy Lyons pacing up and down the floor. Lose your money, learn to lose. Law, the woman come running. She fell down on her knees. She's crying, oh, Mr. Stagley, don't you shoot my brother, please. Lose your money, learn to lose. Now the Stagley shot Billy. Shot him 4 or 5 times. Shot down that poor boy just to see him die. Lose your money, learn to lose. Well, the judge, he told the sheriff, he said, get him dead or alive. And how in the hell can we bring him in when he carries a 45? Lose your money, learn to lose. Old Mrs. Lyons, she said, I don't believe it's so. You and Billy been friends such a very long time ago. Lose your money, learn to lose. Roberta said to Stagley, you look all out of breath. Looks like you might have been the cause of some poor boy's death. Lose your money, learn to lose. Stagley said, Roberta, don't the sky look mean and gray? Believe to my soul, might be my judgment day. Lose your money, learn to lose. Now Stagley went up to heaven, saw St. Peter there. He said, go back the other way. We don't allow no gamblers here. Lose your money, learn to lose. Stagley said to the devil, he said, get up on your shelf. My name is Stagley, you're gonna run this place myself. Lose your money, learn to lose. And the devil's little children, they went scrambling up the wall. They said, take him back, Daddy, before he murders us all. Lose your money, learn to lose. Well, you talk about your gambles, you ought to seen old Richard Lee. You bet $1,000, boys, come out on the three. Lose your money, learn to lose. If you lose your money, learn to lose.
Hello?
Still space in my mind. Lost in my thoughts, can't sleep through the night. It's not okay, it's not alright. I wouldn't take this shit from other guys. You want my attention, I've noticed, but you can't be honest with me, with me. You want my affection, boy, focus, you're hurt, and I know this, be real with me. So don't act